Hello friends, welcome to VSchool. We are on chapter 16. Yet another important chapter, but this is a chapter on alternatives to mergers and acquisition. Up till now, we have understood various types of mergers, acquisitions, reverse mergers, takeovers, the basis, the motives, the due diligence, the legal issues, the financing, the reasons for failures. And in the previous chapter, we also saw how to deal with post-mergers. However, there are three main alternatives to mergers and acquisitions. So what are the learning objectives for this chapter? This chapter helps you understand the alternatives to mergers and acquisitions, the concept and types of divestitures, the reasons and benefits of divestitures, the concept and types of strategic alliances, and the pros and cons of strategic alliances. Basically, in this chapter, you're going to understand three main alternatives to the mergers and acquisitions. The first being the divestitures, the next is the strategic alliance, and the third one is the internal development. So we are going to see at each one of them. So what are the three different alternatives to mergers and acquisitions? Companies consistently look for ways to add value to the shareholders' wealth. And this is done through expansion or contraction of the operations. Mergers and acquisitions tend to focus on the corporate expansion, but companies are often forced to contract or downsize their operations. This occurs when they are performing poorly. Companies have three different alternatives to mergers and acquisitions, apart from several corporate restructuring strategies on the corporate restructuring. These alternatives are divestitures, strategic alliances, and the internal development. In this chapter, you will learn the concept of divestitures, the types of divestitures, the reasons for divestiture, the benefits of divestiture, the strategic alliance, the types of strategic alliance, the implication of strategic alliance, the benefits of strategic alliance, the weakness of strategic alliance, strategic management of alliance, and the internal development. So with this, you understand all the three alternatives to the merger and acquisition. So let us take up first alternative, that is the concept of divestiture. The sale of a part or a firm to another company is referred to as a divestiture. The firm that sells a part receives the payment in cash, marketable securities, or a combination of both. Divestitures are simple exit routes and do not result in the creation of new entities. They involve simultaneous contraction of the selling firm and expansion of the purchasing firm. The general presumption is that corporate contraction or divestiture has a positive impact on the stock prices as it helps the company to get rid of divisions that are no longer adding value and are pulling down the profits of the company. The primary reason for adoption of divestiture, number one, certain saleable assets do not contribute to the firm's profits, rather they put extra pressure on its resources. Number two reason, divesting the excess assets can help a firm focus on its remaining assets, thereby increasing the overall efficiency of the enterprise. Now the next point or the question comes is, when can a divestiture be a good alternative? Most firms look forward to opportunities to expand regulatory measures in the market, often restrict such ambitions. Expansion does not always result in a more successful and a profitable firm. An unsuitable expansion can adversely affect the firm's existing business. When can divestiture be a good alternative? expansions are particularly risky during a recession. In such an environment, divestiture can be a good alternative to deal with. Divestiture represents the sell-off of previous acquisitions. This is generally done to correct the common belief that the said acquisition has failed to add value. So, having understood the concept of divestiture, now let us understand the types of divestiture. Divestiture are classified into two types: the voluntary divestiture and the involuntary divestiture. So, what are the voluntary divestiture? The selling entity feels that a certain division is not adding to its profitability and is diverting the company's attention from more profitable divisions. And to refocus its attention on the profitable divisions, the company might decide to divest the unprofitable division. Such divestiture helps a company get rid of unprofitable divisions assets and help in improving its overall profitability. They also result in increasing the cash flow for the company. When can a divestiture be a good alternative? Most firms look forward to opportunities to expand. Regulatory measures in the market often restrict such ambitions. Expansion does not always result in a more successful and profitable firm. An unsuitable expansion can adversely affect the firm's existing business. This we have also seen in the previous slide. Expansion are particularly risky during recession. In such an environment, divestiture can be a good alternative. Divestiture represents a sell-off of previous acquisitions. The general reason to correct the common belief that a segment failed to add value. This also we have seen in the previous slides. Now, increased cash flows for the company can be deployed towards expanding the profitable divisions, distribution among the shareholders, and repaying the outstanding debt. So, this is the advantage of getting the cash flows because of the divestiture. Now, having seen what a voluntary divestiture is, now let us look at the involuntary divestitures. When a firm is compelled to divest itself of a particular asset as a result of legal dispute, it is referred to as an involuntary divestiture. What can be the reasons for divestiture? Divestitures are motivated by a variety of reasons, such as unprofitable division. When a particular division of a company does not contribute to profitability, the company may consider divesting it. Second important reason for divestiture could be bad fit. A purchased asset may not perform as anticipated and turn out to be a bad fit. The third important reason for divestiture could be reverse synergy. Synergy refers to the added values that result from the combination of assets or business. A decline in the value of the resultant firm is referred to as reverse synergy. The fourth reason for divestiture could be failure to generate the hurdle rate of return. The hurdle rate of return is the minimum threshold that a company uses to evaluate projects of acquired targets. The hurdle rate is generally lower than the firm's cost of capital. When an acquired division fails to generate more than the expected hurdle rate, the parent company might decide to divest the division. The fifth important reason for divestiture could be the capital market factors. Certain categories of investors wish to invest in standalone entities engaging the sector of their interest. And in such a situation, divestiture is the answer. The entity could divest one of the sectors, thus increasing its access to the capital markets. The sixth important reason for divestiture could be generation of cash flow. A firm, particularly during a financial crisis, resort to a divestiture to generate the cash flow. Firms choose to sell a division that owns the long-term assets. The seventh important reason for divestiture is abandoning the core business. The company may strongly feel that its need to grow is prevented by insufficient growth opportunities in its historic specialty, and it is imperative to venture into a broader arena. So these are the seven important reasons for divestiture. Now let us look at the benefits of divestitures. The number one benefit is increased economies of scale and economies of scope. The second important benefit is translate product-specific technologies to entirely different markets. The third important benefit of divestiture is very advantageous where business cycles are involved. The fourth important benefit of divestiture is the funds realized from divestment could be channelized into the other businesses to make them more effective and profitable. The fifth important benefit of divestiture could be companies also look at divestment as an invaluable strategy of discovering unanticipated economies and synergies through the trial and error. So friends, having understood about the concept of divestiture and the various benefits of divestiture, now let us look at the second alternative to merger, which is a strategic alliance. What exactly is a strategic alliance? Strategic alliance refers to the arrangement in which the business entities join forces to form a cooperative partnership. Typically, neither owns the other, though they often create a third entity. In common parlance, strategic alliances are also called as the joint ventures. Strategic alliances, if approached realistically, can provide companies with meaningful ways of achieving growth through the cooperation. Strategic alliances make sense when each party has strengths that offset the weakness of the other. Now, an important question arises. Why do companies enter into strategic alliances? There can be three main factors. The number one factor is internal reasons. Number two can be competitive goals. And number three could be strategic reasons. So let us look at this one by one. Number one, the internal reasons. Company may enter into strategic alliances for various internal reasons, such as to spread the cost and risk, to safeguard resources which cannot be obtained through the market, to improve access to the financial resources, to drive benefits of economies of scale, to gain access to new technologies, customers, and innovative managerial practices. What reason could be a competitive goal? Various competitive goals motivate the companies to enter into strategic alliances. And what are these competitive goals? To preempt competitors, to create stronger competitive units, to influence the structural evolution of the industry, to respond defensively to the blurring industry boundaries and globalization. Now let us look at the strategic reasons. Companies may enter into strategic alliances for various reasons, such as to create and exploit the synergies, to transfer the technologies and skills, and to diversify and derive the related benefits. There can be different types of strategic alliances, and it can be structured in the number of ways. Each structure generates benefits and synergies, poses challenges, and leads to the conflicts. These elements need to be monitored and managed during the course of the implication of the alliance. Now let us look at the different types of strategic alliances. Six types of alliances have been suggested that differ from one another in terms of the relationships between the partners and the strategic focus of the alliance. Number one comes the complementary alliance. Number two is the market alliance. Number three is a sale alliance. Number four is a concentration alliance. Number five is a research and development alliance. And number six is the supply alliance. Now let us look at these each type of alliance one by one. The first one, complementary alliances. Under complementary alliances, the partners combine their technologies to diversify their existing products or market portfolios. In case of a market alliance, it aims at combining the market knowledge of one partner with the product or product know-how of the other. In case of a sale alliance, producer and a local partner cooperate in an arrangement that is a mixture of independent representation and own branch. In case of a concentration alliance, the cooperating partners cooperate to form larger and more economic units. In case of a research and development alliance, the partners aim to create synergy by making the joint use of research facilities, exploring opportunities to specialize, standardize the combined know-how, and sharing the risk. In case of a supply alliance, competitors who need similar inputs need to cooperate with one another to safeguard the supplies, reduce the procurement cost, or to prevent the entry of new competitors. Now let's look at the implication of a strategic alliance. A strategic alliance can have serious and far-reaching implications on the very continuation of the alliance if mismanaged. Partners can have misunderstandings and conflicts on account of various factors such as the formal structure of relationship between the partners, the internationality of alliance, the value-added chains, the profit ownership related issues, as well as the orientation of the alliance. Formal structure of relationship between the partners. How it can impact a strategic alliance. A horizontal relationship is one where the partners are competitors outside the area of proposed alliance. In spite of the alliance, the partners can have conflicts on areas such as the influence of the partners on the alliance strategy, the basis of profit sharing, the contribution or sacrifice made by the partners, and how others view it. Whereas a vertical relationship is one where the partners share a supplier-customer relationships, the areas of conflict under this relationship includes the purchase and supply obligations of each partners and the legal obligations of the partners' dependence of the partners on the alliance. After the horizontal and vertical relationship, a neutral relationship is one where the partners come from different business areas. The areas of conflict include the strategic orientation of the alliance and strategy for handling the situation when the markets converge. Partners need to ensure that these areas of conflicts are known and the proper corrective measures taken at the very beginning to avoid the future misunderstandings. Now let's look at the internationality of alliance. The alliance faces a different set of challenges and issues when the partners come from different countries. This is because of the prevailing cultural and business differences, difference in the language of the two countries, difference in customer needs and consumption partners, patterns, etc. These elements can have a very serious impact on the alliance. Now let's look at the value-added chains. A strategic alliance also has to deal with challenges and conflicts that emerge as a result of its position in the value-added chain. This position affects the autonomy and control relationships within the alliance. For instance, the autonomy of some partners is bound to be sacrificed if the alliance partner is closer to the core activities of certain other partners. Profit ownership related issues. These issues affect the performance and responsibilities of the partners and determine how the alliance would grow in the future. This aspect includes elements such as the structure of the contracts, the profit sharing, the authority assigned, dominance of a partner in the alliance, etc., etc. Next important aspect is the orientation of the alliance. This element gives rise to the issues and problems related to the daily operation of the alliance. The possible areas of difference between the partners include the autonomy, coordination, adaptability, and responsibility sharing amongst the partners. So friends, having seen the different aspects of a strategic alliance, now let us look at the benefits of a strategic alliance. Number one benefit is that partners can share the burden of investments required in the alliance. Number two benefit could be that partners are not required to invest in developing the entire range of capabilities required, as a lot of them already exist, which the partners are willing to share. Number three benefit of a strategic alliance, the alliance is able to attract the funds easily as it is backed by entities that are willing to contribute in all possible ways to make it an alliance successful. Number four benefit of a strategic alliance is very beneficial to small firms that may not have the required competencies in all the areas. So having seen the benefits of strategic alliance, now look at these weaknesses of strategic alliances. Strategic alliances generally suffer from strategic issues that affect the overall performance of the partners. The common weaknesses include those of harmony-related issues, the implication issues, the problems of coherence. So let us look at this one by one. Number one is the harmony-related issues. This is a major concern in a strategic alliance, as the expectation of the partners differ. Harmony-related issues may also arise with partners who may make unequal contributions to the alliance but have very high expectations. These problems arise as related issues are taken very lightly in the initial stages. When harmony gets affected, it results in an atmosphere of mistrust and absence of the commitment. And hence, harmony-related issues have to be very, very taken care of, and attention should be paid that there should not be any harmony-related issues. What are the implication issues? Translating a planned strategy into reality is very difficult. The partners who form an alliance usually agree to a certain strategy. However, they often fail to discuss its implementation, which is very complicated and poses many difficulties. The problems are further aggravated when partners are from an unfamiliar industry and lack the experience to develop a realistic industry-based strategy. There could be problems of coherence. The issue of coherence arises for the partners who are often confronted with additional expectations which are left unexpressed. It may be because they could not be as certain at a stage of analyzing the alliance. Sometimes the expectation also undergo significant changes, and this affects the trust and commitment of the partners and leads to destabilization and weakening of the alliance. What about changes in business environment? There is always a time lag between entering into an alliance and making it operational. During this time lag, the business environment could change, leading to new developments, new expectations, as well as new opportunities. So what should be done? These new opportunities may conflict with the original goals and objectives of the alliances, resulting in a re-evaluation, renegotiation, and redefining of the alliance. They may not always be possible, as it strains the relation between the partners. Now let's look at strategic management of alliances. Achieving close coordination between the partners of a strategic alliance is the biggest challenge. The alliance can grow unabated provided the existing differences and incompatibilities are resolved effectively. This can be avoided with a clear understanding between the partners, avoiding excessive stress on legal contracts, and avoiding greed. Once again, let us look at this one by one. Clear understanding between the partners. The partners in the alliance should establish a clear understanding on all the aspects of the partnership so that the conflicts are avoided. It requires a detailed discussion on the mission of the new venture, the product or services that the venture would offer, the markets it will operate in, the roles, responsibilities, and obligations of each partner, the course of action to be followed in the event of differences among the partners, and the procedure for dissolving the venture if necessary. So these aspects, the partners should have a clear understanding. How to avoid excessive stress on the legal contract. While entering into a contract, stating the terms and conditions of the alliance is very crucial. However, laying excessive focus on the contract to make the alliance work never gives the desired result. Alliances succeed when the partners and their representatives walk that extra mile to make them work. Referring to the contract and its provision obsessively can only spread bitterness and mistrust. Next important factor is avoiding greed. Alliances are entered into for mutual benefits through synergies. It is important that all the partners contribute sincerely towards attainment of the objectives and the mission. There is no room for greed in an alliance where the partners agree to route sharing on the basis of routing and cost. The adoption of route sharing strategy helps the airlines to block the competitive threat of preferential routing in specific markets in which the airline chooses to compete. While such an alliance is expected to ensure competitive parity, in reality it may not happen. The senior partner in the alliance would like to retain a major share in this arrangement out of sheer greed, posing problems to the very continuance of the alliance. So friends, now let us look at the third alternative merger, that is internal development. What is internal development? Internal development is a strategy of building new businesses in-house, more or less from the scratch. Internal development is also known as corporate entrepreneurships. Internal development can be pursued in four different ways. Number one is the venture capabilities. Number two is the new venture incubator. Number three, idea generation and transfer program. And number four is the entrepreneurship. Let us look at this one by one. Number one is the venture capabilities. In this strategy, the company acts as a venture capitalist. A venture capitalist is one who provides funds for a new project, generally in a new sector. What is a new venture incubator? Under this strategy, the company provides not only funds for the proposed venture, but also provides low-cost space, equipment, and limited managerial support. Such entities might be started within an existing company, corporate sponsor, or as an independent entity assisted by a company or a corporate sponsor. The new venture incubator are started when the company or the corporate sponsor has the extra space Now let us look at the new venture incubator. Under this strategy, the company provides not only the funds for the proposed venture, but also provides low-cost space, equipment, and limited managerial support. Such entities might be started within an existing company or a corporate sponsor, or as an independent entity assisted by a company or a corporate sponsor. The new venture incubators are started when the company or the corporate sponsor has an extra space, added equipment, and unused managerial skills and the talent. Now let us look at idea generation and transfer program. This strategy involves executing new business ideas, and once the idea starts giving results, a new entity is transferred to an established company for further development and management. The success rate of this strategy has been much higher than the two earlier options. What is entrepreneurship? This strategy involves encouraging in-house entrepreneurship, entrepreneurial individuals or teams working to develop new ideas for the company. Companies often introduce a number of practices to spread the entrepreneurial spirit amongst its employees. So friends, with this we have reached the conclusion of the chapter. While mergers and acquisitions are important means for retaining the corporate growth, they may not always be feasible and possible for a company. It is because a number of factors and environmental elements have to be evaluated before the company decides to go ahead with its merger and acquisition decisions. If the company feels that the proposed merger and acquisition may not add value or is not feasible vis-a-vis its existing operations, alternatives have to be explored. While the synergistic benefits may not be achieved, the strategies discussed above can certainly improve the profitability of the company. Companies undertake divestitures or strategic alliance to enhance the shareholder value. A company that has been restructured effectively will generally be leaner, more efficient, better focused on its core business. Thank you.